Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online for a throwback Thursday, April 18th, 2019, the only 4/18/2/19 in the history of humanity. Let us continue to choose on purpose, with a purpose, to give a great throwback. And it is indeed a throwback Thursday. I'm solo here in the Hitting Home Media Group studio and still licking my wounds from my Tampa Bay Lightning being swept in a historic first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs to the formerly lowly Columbus Blue Jackets. The reason it's a throwback is because I'm going to be talking about something that is near and dear to my heart, parenting, which I haven't done for a while, but still do a lot of coaching about. And I promise to share with you beautiful humans, which I shall do momentarily. But yeah, I was definitely emotionally affected by the Lightning's early exit. They had a record-setting, record-tying best regular season of 62 wins. And it was my humble sports fan and podcast host opinion that there was not a hockey team in the National Hockey League that could, or I would like to say hockey club in the NHL, that could beat them 4 out of 7 games as long as we stayed healthy, which we did. Sometimes people criticize me for using the pronoun we when it comes to describing the teams I cheer for, but I take ownership. I spend a lot of time, emotion, energy, money, so I'm invested. Now, you might ask, why would a guy who's trying to get a grip on what makes life worth living and how to be more effective in life, what makes a person like that get so emotionally wrapped up in sport? Well, I'll tell you why. First of all, it's how I was raised. It's in my heart. I love it. I've always loved athletics. Secondly, I think that sport, in fact, I know sports are such a wonderful metaphor for real life circumstances. Now, I know that what happens in the Stanley Cup playoffs or any other sport that I am spectating really means nothing. And it really doesn't even mean anything to the people that are playing this sport, as long as they're making money and staying healthy and their family's okay, the important things. It's entertainment. But this is why I enjoy history and nonfiction books and documentaries and film and television, if not about real life situations, at least things that are plausible. I think that real life is more interesting and instructive than anything that we could make up on our own. I think, for example, that the Game of Thrones, which is very popular, a lot of my friends and kids love the Game of Thrones, obviously. It's not plausible. It's not reality. It's fantasy land. I think, for me, that reality is more interesting than anything we could make up, and certainly interesting enough. So I understand that life will clearly go on, but I love getting invested and involved in an effort where you can see real strategy, people responding with real emotion, not acting, by and large, in real time. How do people respond under pressure? How do people respond in a victory, in a loss? What was the strategy behind it? One of the things I do with my relationship coaching is I comprise strategies for my clients because we are in a game. It's called the game of life. And how do you most effectively navigate this thing called life? This is why I'm an excellent life coach. I suck at most things. I really do. I am the least handy man on the planet, for example. I'm not good with numbers. I'm not good with math. I respect people who are handy and who can calculate. But this shit I'm good at. And so I utilize these things to produce strategies for myself and for my clients and for you beautiful humans. The strategy in this particular playoff series started, I think, with the fact that Columbus hired a guy named Marty St. Louis, who is a Hall of Fame hockey player who played most of his career with the Lightning and played under our current coach, John Cooper, who is an excellent coach, just got an extension, a wealthy extension, on an excellent season. And watching that four-game series, I was at game two at Annaly Arena. It was like watching a different hockey team that I had watched the entire season. Apparently, both St. Louis' involvement and John Tortorella, who was also a former Lightning coach, won the Stanley Cup here in 2004 with the Lightning, they figured out how to stop the number one offense in the National Hockey League, the Lightnings, and also how to attack their defense, which was also one of the top defenses in the league. And it worked. yeah, it was tough. It was tough. But you can tell something about a person based on how they respond to winning and losing and incentives. When I used to own the summer camp, Camp Menominee, we utilized sports big time. It's one of the reasons I love camp. I love working with kids. I love working with young people. Love the Northwoods of Wisconsin. But it was the atmosphere and the environment and the circumstance that we found ourselves in that allowed for such tremendous growth and learning opportunities. So we competed in everything at camp because life is competition. I remember one camp that we used to play against and that was also up in the Northwoods would also always promote themselves as non-competitive, as if competition's a bad thing. And we used to play them in sports. They still do play each other, I think, up north. And so parents would ask me when I would go into a home, and I'm here, I'm recruiting Jason or Tommy or whomever, well, how competitive are you? Such and such camp says they're not competitive. And I said, well, let me tell you something, Mr. and Mrs. Schwartz, or whoever they were. We play them in baseball and soccer and ultimate frisbee and basketball, and we keep score. And I've seen their kids very excited when they win and kind of bummed out when they lose. We compete against them. They compete against us. It's very friendly, great sportsmanship. Competition, ladies and gentlemen, is not good or bad. It just is. It's like the need for having a strategy within relationships, the male-female dynamic. It's called the mating game for a reason. There are rules, and if you violate the rules, it's not going to go so well for you. And the question is, as a man or a woman, what are the rules? What is my role within the relationship? And, of course, these are not strict lines, but lines can sometimes get blurred, but they're lines. The man is the provider of the seed, for example. The woman houses the seed. That's where everything starts. So everything gets extended from that rule of the man being the provider and the woman being the receptor, the receiver, if you will. As lines get blurred and people don't follow the guidelines, so to speak, that's when things can get pretty cocked up, so to speak. Competition just is. And so I would say to the parents and to my camp counselors, my staff, competition is just a fact of life. So the question is, how do you deal within that dynamic? How do you deal with things like incentive? Is it more effective to win than to lose? And how do you win? How do you go about winning? How do you embrace being a gracious winner and to accept loss as a possible outcome? Are you a sore loser? Or are you a gracious loser? Today, the Mueller report came out, theoretically pretty much exonerating President Trump on collusion with the Russians and on obstruction of justice. Certainly, he's not being charged. Mueller didn't suggest or recommend that he be charged, and he's not being charged. So what did President Trump do? He sent out a big Game of Thrones, speaking of Game of Thrones meme, saying, game over, and really stuck a shiv to his political opponents instead of being a gracious winner, not surprisingly, Donald J. Trump, said F you to his opponents. And now his supporters say, well, look at the way he's been treated. But see, it is the bigger man or woman that can rise above the fray like that. I remember when, I'm a huge supporter of equal rights for all humanity, including LGBTQI people all over the planet. I was very happy when the Supreme Court ruled that lesbian and gay people have the equal rights to be married. Now, politically, whether they it should have gotten to the Supreme Court, that's for another time. But what did the Obama White House do that day, that night? They lit up the White House in the rainbow colors of the gay rights movement. I thought that sucked, and I was a supporter. Because there were tens, if not hundreds, of millions of Americans that were not happy with that Supreme Court ruling. That was not being a gracious winner. President Trump was not a gracious winner today. You don't have to stick it to your opponent when you lose. And when you, or excuse me, when you win. And when you do lose, lose with dignity, with your head held high. Losses are tough, for sure. I've suffered my share of them in my near 60 years on this terra firma. But to the degree that you can hold your head high and say, I did my best, I gave my best effort, and the ball did not drop for me properly, the cards did not come up, I can live with that because I made my best effort. That's the first thing that we taught the kids. It's about effort. But we competed in everything at camp. Not only just sports, we competed in who made their the bed the best during cabin cleanup or who was the best singer. And it was done in a fun, loving, accepting atmosphere because we think that that's more effective. And we won a lot at camp. But we were losing. When Dawn and I first bought Menominee, we were getting our asses kicked in sports. And there were reasons for that. But we realized that we had to figure it out, that doing the same approach that we had with the kids when we were playing other camps wasn't working. We got really good at losing with dignity. But it's more fun to win. Of course it is. And then the question is, what is your motivation for winning? Why do you want to make a good living? What do you want to do with that money? We want to encourage and raise giving, loving people. One of the first things I used to do when I would train my staff, you got to picture this, okay? Have some sort of relay. This is before the campers would get there. And we'd have two teams, competition. And a lot of times it'd be down at the lakefront and there'd be a lot of splashing and screwing around the first time because I didn't have a reward for the 40 or so counselors, 45 counselors that were competing in this little life lesson, camp lesson that I was about to give them. They screwed around. One team won, one team lost. And then I would say, okay, fellas, here's what we're going to do. We had an all-boys camp, so we had almost an all-male staff. It was a resident camp in Eagle River, Wisconsin. And so I would say, okay, fellas, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the race one more time. But this time, the winning team is going to split a $100 winning prize. You could just feel the energy change. Now, there might have been about 50 staff members there, so 25, 25. We're talking about $5 a piece or $4 a piece max. But the intensity level with just that little added incentive was increased, and the excellence and the strategy and the teamwork and the spirit and the everything increased exponentially when I added incentive. And that was the lesson for the counselors. To the degree that you can with the boys during the course of the summer, if you want a good result, add incentive. Incentivize the situation. And so that's what we did. We did that with our staff all summer long. We did it with the boys, and we got great results. We incentivized our parents to become our ambassadors for the camp. They would get significant bonuses and discounts for referring other kids. So when Dawn and I decided to have kids, we met at the University of Wisconsin and in Madison. I was a senior, Dawn was a junior. And somehow, I decided that I wanted to have a big family. I came from three boys, but I wanted to have a lot of kids. I always liked being around people, and it was one of the reasons that I pursued purchasing the camp. And I met Dawn Olson from Edgerton, Wisconsin, and for some reason, she wanted five kids, and I wanted five kids. And it just kind of fit in more ways than one, if you know what I'm saying, from there on out. And so we started popping out these kids, Joseph, Jacob, Judah, Hannah Joy, Isaac Joel, who just turned 25 last Tuesday, and Jessica Grace with the pretty face, the J team, I called them. Got a name for everything, of course. Gracie, we adopted at birth. And most parents today, when I say today, and throughout history, don't have a parenting strategy. They haven't taken their role as parents very seriously. We go to school, trade school, for everything. We have to study to get a driver's license. There are regulations for not being a parent. As long as you follow the law vis-a-vis children, which is not very hard to do, just don't be a complete jerk to your to your kids. Don't be abusive to them. And you're going to be left alone most of the time. But we do no training for our parents. There are all kinds of good books and good information, but most parents just pop out their kids, and they just do the best they can as their parents did. Sometimes it works out really well, sometimes not so much. There's a balance between unconditional love, which needs to be present, understanding how children develop, and discipline. I had the unconditional love growing up. My folks loved me, and they love me to this day. They're 82 years old. My mom just celebrated her 82nd birthday a few days ago. Happy birthday again, Mom. They've been together 67 years. Great example of love and support. But I had no discipline growing up. And I was a pain in the ass on top of it. Very headstrong. Very stubborn. When I decided at the ripe old age of 19 years old that I wanted to buy Camp Menominee, my dad, who loved camp, went to Camp Interlochen for 13 years, was vehemently against it, could not understand how somebody could make a living running a summer camp. But I didn't care. I was going to do it one way or another. And I was doing it. I worked as an assistant director at the camp. I worked as a full-time director before I bought it. And eventually, not only did my dad understand that I was going to do this no matter what, but he got on board big time. Big time Dick Cheney, as I like to say. You know what that's from? When George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, it's really supposed to be pronounced Cheney, but everybody says Cheney, were running for president and vice president. There was a live hot mic, and Bush recognized a New York Times reporter named Adam Kleiman, or Kleiman, I guess his name was, and he pointed it out to Cheney's, he goes, there's Kleiman. He's a major league asshole. George W. Bush said that on a hot mic. And Cheney said, yeah, big time. So that's how I get big time Dick Cheney. Got his nickname from your friendly neighborhood podcast host. You can't be fun online. So the desire to own the summer camp. I mean, I was 19 years old. And my dad got on board big time. Big time Dick Cheney. And we had a great experience. But when Joseph Jens Olsen Klein was born, he was your classic firstborn. Pliable, malleable, wanting to please. And then number two came along. And here's good information for you young parents and grandparents out there. Birth order is a big deal. Typically, the firstborn is desirous to please. This is especially if the first and secondborn are the same sex. They really want to make their parents happy, as I did. Number two, not necessarily. That's the bigger challenge. Typically, number two is the rebel. And in our family, that was true with me, even though I was very headstrong and a pain in the ass. And I was an excellent student and athlete, and not so much with my brother Steve. I have three boys, or two brothers, three boys in our family. Me, Steve, Jimmy. Jimmy's the youngest. Steve, the middle, I think he's more intelligent than Jimmy and I put together, but he just couldn't get his shit together. Nice guy, but really struggled and very rebellious in his own way. Same thing in my family. Here comes number one, Joe Klein, just the sweetest, go along. He's 33 years old now. He's the nicest man on the planet. And here came number two, Jacob Klein. Jake, to say was a challenge right from the get-go would be an understatement. He would do flip-flops inside of Dawn. He was moving and grooving before he ever came out. And we have this home that we still have in Eagle River, and there's a nice, beautiful fireplace, and there's a wood lip around the ledge, around the stone ledge, around the fireplace. It's dangerous for kids. And so when Joe was starting to crawl and climbing up, I would just have to say, Joe, get down. Boom, he would get down immediately. But when Jacob got to the point where he could climb up on that, I would say, Jakey, get down. And here's what I would hear. He'd freak out. And I thought to myself, oh, I might have to approach this one a little bit differently. So we had some really good parenting strategy when we were raising the kids. And not least of which, because of our experience at camp. But I knew that incentive was really important. And I also knew human nature. This is really where the life coaching started. Humans have no problems being negative. It takes no effort for us at all to be negative about our significant others, our kids, our society, our friends, our family, our bosses, whomever. It takes absolutely no effort at all to generate negativity, but it really takes concentration and focus to be positive, to catch kids doing good. Again, a perspective that I picked up while being a camp director. I noticed as a young parent that I had no problem saying no to my kids and to correcting them. But I had to figure out a way to train myself to positively reinforce the kids to be affected by positive reinforcement. Whatever you give attention to, beautiful humans, towards another person, you're going to get more of. Especially with kids. But this is true in other relationships as well. If you positively reinforce and ignore as much of the negative as you can, you're going to get a more positive result. And while my six, who are now have four significant others amongst the six, and we have a grandson named Connor now, anybody that meets him knows that this is a solid group. Now, I don't take any personal credit for this at all. I'm just sharing a perspective. I will never recommend myself personally. I'll recommend my perspective and my skill set all day long. Because as I said, I suck at most things. I'm a great coach, not the best player. Have you ever noticed that the greatest players, the Hall of Fame players, usually are not very good coaches. Who knows how good a coach Marty St. Louis was or is for the Columbus Blue Jackets, but he brought some good information that I can tell you, and I know John Tortorella is a good coach. But Tortorella wasn't a great hockey player. John Cooper, who's a great coach for the Lightning, he wasn't a great hockey player. Because when you're not great playing, but you're interested in the sport or the situation, you really have got to concentrate. You've really got to observe. You've really got to pay attention. So what I'm recommending to you guys is not me, but is this perspective. And I'm telling you, it takes no effort at all for human beings to be negative. But it really takes a concerted, focused effort to be positive. So what to do? So I came up with a camp program for our kids that I named the Nickel Ceremony. And any parent can adopt it to whatever degree you make it your own. But I'm telling you, it was the effective program, if you will, that produced some really outstanding, beautiful humans. In the case of Joe, Jake, Jude, Hannah, Isaac, and Gracie. And they've drawn wonderful spouses to themselves. It's beautiful. So here's how it would work. The nickels were actual nickels. And the kids, once they started exhibiting their own will and understood what was going on, they were initiated into the nickel ceremony. And you could never lose a nickel. It was nothing but positive reinforcement. There was no taking nickels away. Now, you could not get as many nickels if you weren't on your game. But we really worked very hard, Dawn and I did, to get the kids to listen to us the first time. And we believed in what we call pow-pows, what's called corporal punishment, never out of anger. I'll talk about that some other time, because I know it's very controversial, especially today. But our kids have embraced how important it was to have pow-pows. Worked out pretty well. That was if they didn't listen. But if they did, or when they did, and they would say, for example, thank you or please in public to a waitress or a waiter, or they would come the first time, or they would exhibit love and giving attitudes towards their siblings or their friends, or they would get good grades, or we got good report cards or good reports from their teachers at the parent-teacher conferences, or whatever the hell. They would, Joe, that's a nickel. Jakey, that's a nickel. Jude, that's a nickel. Hanny, that's a nickel. Nickel, 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 nickel. Nickel all the time. And so I never really kept track of exactly how many nickels were happening, but it was effective. Positive reinforcement all day long, all week long, all month long. And then about once a quarter, I would march around. First of all, our house had these spotlights on the fireplace. And I would make sure all the lights were turned off in the house. And I would march around singing Hail to the Chief or humming it. It would be like this. All the lights would be off. They wouldn't know it. They'd be in their bedrooms or down in the basement or whatever. And the spotlights would be on the fireplace. And here's what the kids would hear. Dun da da dun da da da. Dun da da dun da da da. It's Ruffles and Flourishes. Dun da da dun da da da. 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 Dun, dun, da-da, dun, da-dun, da-dun, da-dun. And so I'd march around the house. Of course, the kids would go apeshit. They'd run to right in front of the fireplace. We had a little carpet, a little rug right in front of the fireplace. They'd have to have their toes not on the carpet, but right up to the carpet, lined up in chronological order. So you had Joe, Jake, Judah, Hannah, Isaac, and Gracie. As they got old enough to start understanding that they were being rewarded, incentivized for doing well. And then I'd go and get thousands of nickels at the bank. And I would get on my knees, and it's very important when you're talking to kids to get on their level so that you're looking eye to eye, because it's very intimidating when you're reaching out to children and wanting to touch their lives to be looking down at them. So I would get on my knees, and then I would look in the eyes, and I would say, Joe Klein, come forward. And he would step forward, and I would recount all the wonderful things that they had done during the course of the quarter. For the way that you obeyed Mom, for the way that you helped Hannah, for the good friend that you were to Sam, or whatever the case was, for getting three A's, for being a good sport and little, whatever, I mean, just thing after thing after thing. And then I would say, for all these reasons and more, you get 572 nickels. Please hold out your hands. And then I would take the nickels, and then I would pour them into their hands, and so much sensory perception was happening here. The smell of the coins, the clinking of the coins, the falling over the floor, all the hail to the chief. I never told them that the hail to the chief song that they were hearing that started the nickel ceremony was the way that the president of the United States of America would be welcomed. I knew they'd find out eventually. And one of them did one time. They were like, Pop, do you know what the nickel ceremony theme is? And I said, yes. How did you find out? Well, I was watching the news, and yeah, that's what it was about. Music and sounds and smells, it just can elicit so many positive things. And so I would do this nickel ceremony quarter after quarter, year after year, until the kids turned 13. After they turned 13, they would have one more nickel ceremony. And in Jewish tradition, of course, 13 years old is when the kids get bar or bat mitzvah. It's the turning point of when, theoretically, they're a man or a woman. Well, I just took that as an opportunity. It was like, okay, it's enough. They're becoming teenagers. When kids become teenagers, they're not children anymore. They're teenagers. And their hormones are starting to tell them that it's time to leave the nest. And a lot of times parents do is, because when the kids are little, you can kind of control them. You don't want to discipline them because you can kind of control them. And what parents often do is they start trying to control their kids as they become 13, 14, 15 years old. That's not the time to do it. We have it completely bass-ackwards. That is the time to start becoming their friend. And I know that's a huge criticism. But the healthiest relationship between parent and child evolves and transforms into a friendship. You'll always be their parent. They'll always be your son or daughter. But it's time to start looking at them more like equals, because that's how they're feeling biologically. That's what their hormones are telling them. I am becoming a young woman or a young man, but my parents are still treating me like a six-year-old. That's not effective parenting. I'm not saying you let your teenagers run ragged over you. They're going to test you. But if and when they become, show that they are trustworthy, trust them. Because guess what they're going to do most of the time if you don't? They're going to sneak around and lie to you and go behind your back, and that sets the tone for their early years as an adult and maybe into their significant other relationships like work, romance, friendships, business, etc. Don't recommend trying to rein your kids in once they become teenagers. Do it with discipline, and we smothered our kids with unconditional love and the nickel ceremony. And so they would graduate at 13 years old, then they would be sitting on the couch with Mama Dawn watching their siblings, and eventually it got down to one. Jessica Grace Olsen Klein was the last woman, young woman standing. But we positively reinforce. I'm telling you guys, whatever you give attention to, you're going to get more of. I used to tell my staff at camp, don't have rules you don't need. Because another massive human characteristic is to press or push the envelope. Where is the line drawn? We want to go over the line. Remember when President Obama drew the red line for Assad of Syria, and he went over it, and we didn't do bupkis. And then the catastrophe in Syria happened. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have happened otherwise, but I'm telling you, he made a rule, and then he didn't. I'm not even saying that rule was a legitimate or an effective strategy. Frankly, I don't think it is. As a libertarian, politically, I don't think we should be involved very often in these foreign wars. But the bottom line is, if you don't follow up on your word is no good. Don't have rules and regulations that you don't need. You're going to have some anyway. You might as well have the most limited rules that you can have so that the ones that you do have, you can adhere to. And you've got to develop, if you're a young parent, you've got to develop a way to focus yourself on being positive. It's a much more pleasant atmosphere to raise kids in. It's a much more positive atmosphere to live in. It ain't easy. And you know why I can say it ain't easy? Because there's not that many people doing it. But I highly recommend it. If there's anything that I can do for you, whether it be to help you with your parenting or your relationships or any other area of your life, that's why I'm called a life coach. I can help. I can develop an app, if you will, and I do, great strategies. Or I can find somebody and help you find somebody that can help you, whether it be with finances or with health, your relationships, your parenting, your physical fitness, whatever it is. As I said, I suck at most things, but this shit I'm good at. So I want to thank you, as always, for logging on. Tell your folks or your friends about Glenn Klein Online. Don't forget about our other podcast, Sex in the Pews. It's not for the faint of heart. It's where we celebrate healthy human sexuality and expose unhealthy religion, the ill effects historically of religion on a healthy human sexual experience. It's not for everybody. It's raw. It's funny as fuck, but I'm just telling you, it's different. So we do this general long-form podcast where we can talk about many different topics as we do. But on Sex in the Pews, we focus primarily on that. Although we do get into all kinds of stuff on that show, too. It's a good show. It's a great show. For example, Saturday, we're going to be having a 420 special, since it is 420, with number two, with the very lovely and talented and sometimes rebellious Jacob Klein, number two son, who happens to be a marijuana grower, a farmer out in Southern California. We're going to have a great time with Jacob. That'll be on Sex in the Pews. Coming up this Saturday. So from the Hitting Home Media Group studios in beautiful Tampa Bay, it's GlennKleinOnline.com, coach@GlennKleinOnline.com. If there's any way that I can help you, please do not hesitate. And if you got an idea for a show or for a guest, please let me know. And until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody.